Hey, everybody, this is Walton Goggins. I'm the guest on Smartless today. And I can't wait to have a conversation with these three fellas. Only one of them know that I'm going to be here. So let's get this conversation started. Thanks for listening. Welcome to Smartless.
Smart.
Wait, whose guest is it today?
Shut up, Sean.
Jason's. You can tell by the attitude.
Fuck you, piece of shit.
Hey, look at Will's on the Western
looks
set.
Looks like you have a smoking jacket
his
on.
His fucking quilted, self-stitched, what's it called?
Santa Fe something.
Yeah. Will, how much research? So Will's doing a Western thing.
Not a Western.
What is it?
What kind
it's with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Yeah. He's reprising.
By the way, our friend Michelle Fifes, who said to me,
Michi Fee.
And he said, she goes, I know we got to take a break so you can do your podcast. She was being sort of coy.
She said with a mocking tone.
Yeah. And I said,
she was good on the show.
I said, you were great on the show. We loved having you. And I hope you got a good response. And she said that people came out of the woodwork too and that people listened to it. So how about that?
That's nice.
So.
People always say, oh, I don't want to do the show. And then they're happy that they do the show.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know.
Don't you feel like we just all slept together in the same cabin somewhere because we just did this like 10 hours ago?
I know. It was.
You know what I mean? Like we just
Well, let's go back to.
Yeah, hang on. Why is everyone sleeping in a cabin?
Oh, because I'm dressed like I'm in a cabin.
Well, that we just all slept in the same house and then we just woke up for breakfast and then we started doing this again.
Yeah.
Wait, what is your dream?
You know what I mean?
What was for breakfast?
Sushi. I just had sushi.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I went to Zabar's. You know, Zabar's really close.
Oh, yeah. Famous for their sushi.
Zabar's is making
It's true. I put a jacket on. I went next door and I ate some sushi.
Listen,
I mean, I brought it home.
Hey, you shit pig. Remember yesterday when you said I just had Chinese food? I thought to myself, self, that sounds really good. And so I ordered some Chinese for me last night. And,
oh, you
and
did?
Maple. And
how
we
about
had Chinese
that?
For the first time in a long time.
Right.
Boy, was it good. Good.
That's right. What did you have?
I was wondering about your face because I could see there was something... You know,
Will. Wait till you see my face after sushi lunch today.
Yeah. Wait. Do you get like you know anything kind of naughty when you order Chinese, like breaded chicken or breaded something, or
no,
is it all like
no
a bamboo shoots and you know?
No, we had a couple of chicken dishes and a noodle dish, and there were some vegetables. And,
yeah,
you know, because I said to Amanda, I said, "You order, baby. I don't want to. Don't let me see anything on the menu because I'll order Sean's food."
And she went like totally clean and everything.
Yeah,
right?
And it was good, and it was great.
All right, wait, Will. One of the grossest images I ever witnessed in my life was going over to Jason's house. And he's swimming in his pool in the backyard.
Yeah, you're right. Gross.
Amanda has a big hat on covering the sun. And from the pool on his floaty, he goes, honey, can we get some sushi for lunch? While he's baking in the sun. It's so
hashtag
Hollywood
relatable.
He FaceTimed me once floating on a floaty in his pool. I was like, all I thought about was like, obviously, Ernest Borgnine in the pool. He would. By the way, it just reminded me, I forgot to tell you. So, a little while ago, I run into Griffin Dunn, our old pal Griffin Dunn.
The great Griffin Dunn.
So Griffin Dunn tells, you know, so he says, I've been meaning to tell you this story. He said, years ago, when this is public record, he said when Ernest Borgnine was getting divorced, his wife cited, one of the problems that she cited in the court record was of their differences, what that, that she found that as a problem, as grounds for divorce, was that Ernest Borgnine would Dutch oven her. He'd fart in the bed and pull the covers over her head.
Is that real? Is that real?
I swear to God. It's apparently, and I looked it up. It's true. And she hated it and she was disgusted by it. And so he was like, I gotta tell Will, I gotta call him. So he had my old phone number because I haven't spoken to him like in like 4 years or something, and I'd switched my number. Right. So he's sending me stuff and he calls me and the guy goes, hello? And he goes, hey, listen, you know, this thing about Griffin, you know, he goes, hey, Will, and the guy sort of says, yeah. And then he goes, listen, Ernest Borgnine and the thing and the reason he got divorced and the Dutch oven and this stuff. And the guy goes, this isn't Will. Okay, he's changed his number. And that is a disgusting. Why would you think I'd want to know this disgusting? And hung up on him.
That's really funny.
God. Listener, as a backstory, you should know that I bought Ernest Borgnine's old house.
Years ago.
And Will has been riding me for years that what I've done is I've made a bad purchase because...
Not a bad purchase.
Well, no. When you consider that supposedly Ernest Borgnine was a world-class masturbator.
Well, right. He credited his longevity with the fact that he claimed that he masturbated every day. So I've always imagined him everywhere in the house leaning against the railing. Right. I don't know why.
Just a goose shack. Yeah. And so it's in the pool too, Will, and there's also lots of farts stuck in the master. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, and when Ernest Borgnine no. That is crazy.
Welcome to Smartless.
So I've been meaning to tell you that.
All right, let me pull up my notes here.
Oh yeah,
let's get this organized.
All right. I've written a little intro. Where is it? Here it comes. What we've got here today.
So smooth.
Oh, God. Stop shouting.
Well, we're back from commercial. What we've got here today is an actor, an exciting actor. This guy knows how to put you on his back and carry you into the world of some pretty interesting characters.
Oh, I like
some
that.
Are funny, some are scary, some are dark, some are breezy. Whatever it is, though, it's always a good ride. He's the kind of actor that gives you the grin of expectation and the feeling of relief that you're in good hands for wherever you're going. Guys, I write these myself. Okay?
You can tell.
He was born in Alabama, raised in Georgia, moved to Hollywood at 19, and has brought us iconic roles in films like Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight, and on TV he's given us gold in shows like The Shield, Justified, Vice Principals, Righteous Gemstones, and recently White Lotus and Fallout. Dudes, here's Mr. Walton Goggins Jr.
Yo, man.
Here he is.
Yo, man.
Now we get it started.
Wait, why I didn't know that you had to masturbate every day to lead McHale's Navy.
You got to get the evil out if you want to stick around a while.
Damn it. I wanted to get that show.
Why do you look so sharp today?
Do I look sharp?
Everything.
Yeah. Are you in the middle of a junket?
But yeah, in the middle. Day, I think three or four, something like that.
No,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Man. Yeah. In it. But this is the first one for today. So okay. And I had a
we get you fresh.
So I'm doing okay.
Oh, yeah.
You got me fresh.
This is for Fallout?
Yeah, for Fallout.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Fallout. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I know that there's a surprise guest, and I saw Will the other night.
I know.
And I almost
did you keep it zipped?
You were so good.
Well, I didn't know who was it. I didn't know who the host was.
Dude, right? You were so good. I had no idea. I mean, I was focused on your full-length leather coat you were wearing, and it was 100 degrees in that room.
But. So was I, because I was sweating. I lost 10 pounds that night. It was great. Oh,
hey,
my God.
So here's the deal. MGT. Maybe we've just sniffed out what the hole is sometimes when every once in a while, Walton, a guest will come up to one of the three of us and say, hey, can't wait to see you next week. And it's just
Or their rep
or something like that. So what I think is the guest needs to be told, Michael, who the hosting fella is.
Yeah.
Right.
They're told. The reps are told.
They're told.
They are told. We're keeping that in. Yeah. We're keeping that they're told in.
The host, I mean, the guest knows who the hosts are. This is Smartless, man.
No, but, you, but like, if host, but you
people,
didn't
your
know
people
if,
didn't oh, tell but, you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
so this
right.
is more, you know who we need to be speaking to are Walton's representatives.
The reps. Get them on the phone.
Yeah, we're going to get
they're in the room. Some of them are in the room right now. Do you hear that? Why didn't you tell me, honestly?
It doesn't matter. It's yeah. truly have no idea just to cut on down on homework for the other two.
What's up, fellas?
What's
Dude,
up, bud?
It's all right, so good to meet you.
So you're out there right with the sandwich board for the Fallout.
I am. Yeah. We're just starting.
And how are, let's just jump off right there. How are you enjoying?
God, he loves to jump off.
What's the pre-call?
I love to jump off.
What's the pre-call on that? You got a 2-hour what's the pre-call? You know what? For the makeup chair.
Yeah, man. It's like 3 hours. You know, before anybody else shows up. I mean, it got so bad. Like not so bad, but we filmed the first season in New York.
Yeah.
For some reason, honestly.
Well, because you've got a place there, a beautiful place there in the Hudson Valley. They thought maybe we'll make it geographically attractive for Mr. Goggins.
But never saw it. Never left the city, really, except to go to Namibia. But we're out here now, and we were out filming in the desert. I've got this van, you know, that like so many other people. I've
that you
got
rent there. Back to the company, and you call it your dressing room?
As a matter of fact, I do. Yes,
wait,
I do.
What?
It's working. Yeah,
here's
working.
What you do, Sean.
What are you talking about?
When you're a fancy pants like Walton and you're working all the time, the smart money is spent on like a motorhome or a van or something like that.
You buy it yourself.
Yeah, and then you rent it back to the production as your dressing room. And so they give you the money for dressing room rental.
Oh, so it pays for itself.
Yeah. It pays for itself.
Kind of. Yeah, I mean, it's a little harder in New York than it is in Los Angeles.
Parking on 8th Avenue.
Yeah, parking is very expensive there.
The parking tickets offset the rental fee.
Yeah, but it worked out. But so we got to the point where we were kind of filming like out in the desert a few times, and I just stayed for the first time. I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but I stayed at base camp. Everybody
you slept
else
in your
were
trailer
in these,
overnight?
Like, you know, really kind of bad hotel rooms, like in the middle of nowhere.
So you slept at the location?
Yeah, at the location with a security guard. Everybody else leaves.
Smart.
And I just had my food.
Did you stick them for the hotel money too? Give me that.
Yeah, I got those $60.
Attaboy.
Yeah, I said, no, come on.
I love it.
You have your shower and a little kitchen in there and everything.
Yeah, everything. And it was only 4 steps to work. You know,
you didn't
I mean, like my call
there.
Time was. I mean, I had. Yeah, I did shower there.
Did
yeah,
you really?
As a matter of fact, every single night. Yeah, of course. I mean, you got to
shower
when
that
you have
water.
That stuff on your face.
Jason would never
use that water.
Jason, you'd never use trailer water, right?
Yeah. No. Exactly. I don't want to smell like a hose.
I have filtered. Yeah. I only use.
But Walton, you do strike me as a fella. You do strike me as a fella that is not afraid to walk barefoot on a hotel rug.
Okay. No, I walk barefoot across the desert.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're a guy that I'm a soft man.
Yeah.
You don't seem like a soft fella at all. You can handle quite a bit of taking away the creature comforts.
You know, well, I had an experience where all the creature comforts were taken away. Like, and I didn't realize how many they were going to take away, but I'm a father. I know,
sure.
There's two other parents here, and Sean, you have a dog.
Stop bragging.
I know that's yeah. Hey, you know, I just have one, so I can kind of, you know, not take a job for a while. But I took him. He was 14, right? Mm-hmm. About to turn 15, mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, this is a big transition, kind of in your life, and we need to mark this occasion. Mm. And I took him on a 2-week horseback riding trip across Western Mongolia.
Oh, wow.
That? Yeah, no,
How
it was a big
he?
Deal. It was a big deal. He's 14. He'll be 15 in about 6 weeks. And it was just an opportunity for us to kind of get out there and see the world.
That's
and
cool.
We're both obsessed with Genghis Khan.
Jason would be stressed. Jason would be stressed going to the first class lounge in Mongolia. Like that would
be actually.
Where are you gonna find Air Mongolia? Where are you gonna find a TV with CNN International or coffee
yeah,
pods or anything
you don't,
like
you don't
that?
Get a signal, you're, man.
Yeah. But where do you again? You do strike me as a guy who's so sort of. There's a lot of texture in your life. I'm surrounded with thread count and things like that.
Yeah.
I like thread count too. You know,
I know how to do both.
Mongolian cashmere. I mean, I like all of those things. But on this trip, here's what happened. And other than maybe we'll get to like a parenting moment, you know, with my son, which was extraordinary.
Yeah, I want to see it. I hear that.
But on day three, I mean, it took us about like 72 hours just to get to the starting point, you know?
Yeah.
And stopped and missed a flight, spent the night in Istanbul, which is, you know, hey, throw me in the briar patches. I love that place.
Wow.
And and we made it to Ulaanbaatar. Then another plane landed in Western Mongolia, and then like an 8-hour drive to just the starting point. And we got there, and and it was just the two of us. We're obsessed with that part of the world. And then we start, you know, start in earnest. We meet everybody. Nobody speaks English. We have an interpreter. It's just the two of us, five horses, I mean, seven horses, five camels, and an interpreter, two horsemen, an eagle hunter.
Who sets
and
this up?
And a cook, man. Like, it's what? Legit. It's a real, it's the real deal.
Wow.
And we're both, like, in the tent the first night looking at each other going, like, we're here, man. Mm-hmm. We did that. We did it. And the very first, when we landed in Western Mongolia, my son looked at me and he said, I've never been this happy in my life, Dad.
Wow.
So he's got that wanderlust like I do. So cut to day two, you know, something like it kind of happened. And he, you know, was like, wow, this is, excuse my language, this is really fucking hard, Dad. Like, this is really, this is hard. Like, this is really hard. And he was, you know, he was missing his mom.
Yeah.
And missing, you know, his life. And I said, you know what, buddy, I understand it is hard. You're absolutely right about it. It's very, very hard. And you can be in this place and I'll hold you and I'll love you and I'll comfort you in this time. Or you can he said he really wanted to go home. And I said, okay, but I'll hold you and I'll comfort you. And for as long as you want. I mean, for the next 12 days. Or you can accept that. This is your reality, right? You're not changing this reality.
Right.
And you can let that fester and you can react to that.
Wow.
Or you can accept the fact that this is your reality
and
actually learn, you know, and spend and not waste that energy.
Just tuck in.
Emotion. It's up to you. And literally at 14 years old, he said, I just need, can I use the battery? Because there's no... You don't have cell phones. We only have, you know, little bitty batteries with us or whatever. It's like, you can use the battery if you use it up. Use it for whatever you want. He's like, I just need to listen to some music.
Yeah.
He did. He sat in the tent. He came out about 45 minutes later, and he just looked up at me with this big, beautiful grin on his
face. With a plane ticket. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, with a plane. And he thumbs up, like, I'm good, Dad. I'm good. And then, so it's like, okay, he got through that.
Yeah.
The next morning, I'm on the horse. We're all leaving this whole caravan. It takes a whole process of getting ready to go. And I've been riding horses my whole life. My son is an unbelievable rider. And my horse just trips.
Uh-oh.
And I went down. I wouldn't see it. I didn't see it coming.
Oh, now who's got to go home?
And she rolled. Well, she rolled on top
of me. Now he needs to be held.
Exactly. Well, this is what happened. She rolled on top of me. I was able to push her off thinking like, oh, my God, I just broke my leg. That's it. And looked down. I was like, okay, leg's fine. Everything's okay. And then I went to stand up and I immediately collapsed. Something was wrong. Something was really wrong. And my son looked at me. He's like, Dad, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, dude, I'm okay. I'm all right. I got up on the horse, rode for 7 hours. Don't remember it. Had a couple of Advil. My wife threw in a bag. What I realized, you know, after a few days is that I broke my rib.
Oh, God.
And then all of a sudden, I'm like taking the advice that I just gave my son because it's like, hey, man, nobody's coming to get you. You know, you're in the middle of nowhere. There is no like helicopter coming to air vac you out of here, man, medevac you out of here. You got to go. You got to ride. And so it was, you know, another 9 days.
Where is that kind of pain? Dude, Jay, are you going to tell the story about the cred now?
Jay, you about to tell the story about when they got in have your valet ticket at the Governor's Awards?
Yeah, and I'm like, hey, man.
You waited like 10 minutes for them to sort out your limo. You remember that?
A solid 10 minutes. And
this happened two days ago.
And I had to talk to a bunch of people I didn't want to talk to.
Yeah.
My tux was bags in your hand. Itchy.
Yeah. And we offered to hold them.
Walton, where'd you get this kind of thick skin emotionally, spiritually? Did you have a couple of good parents?
Well, I think we all have thick skin. Like, you know, it's just a matter of being exposed to it. I'm a poor kid from Georgia, and my parents divorced. You know, when I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
And I grew up around a bunch of, you know, when I say crazy,
With love.
With love, yeah, curious and really colorful,
I like
colorful Southern women, you know, and little bitty farmhouse, you know, outside of Atlanta. And yeah, we didn't have anything. I mean, we didn't have like, you know, central air. I mean, we had like a heater, you know, that that emitted. I mean, like it is the cause of global warming. Like this one particular furnace that we had in our house, and yeah, we just didn't have much, but we didn't want for much. And I don't know. I just think growing up that way.
Well, what about all this privilege and luxury and
I love it.
Elitism that you're rolling around with every once in a while? You think, is it getting you soft?
I love it.
Yeah.
Is it getting me soft? Yeah. I mean, I suppose. Yeah. Right. You get used. Everybody has a new normal.
But you know how to categorize it, right? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
You're still able to go to Mongolia and get along.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can I ask you some questions about that story? That it's crazy.
I just can't believe I'm talking to the three of you, man. This is just so.
Likewise.
Two of you I know, and Sean, I don't know. So, yes, right. Ask me anything.
We went to Istanbul once.
Okay. What?
Yeah, we went to Istanbul.
Yeah.
Don't make
them together.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
They were at the Four Seasons there at the old prison.
That's true. That is true.
But a week after we left, it was like a big terrorist attack. Do you remember that?
I know.
Like a week after we got out of
there. Wow.
We'll be right back. And now back to the show.
So the broken rib, how do you get through that many days.
Oh, this
days.
Is going to be about ribs at Chin Chin.
Okay, it's really interesting. You talk about, how do I get through with a broken rib?
Yeah, I get you through that many, 9 days. What do you do with the pain and how do you heal? And like, what do you do?
Okay,
you
he's heal? Hard, man.
Well,
he can do
well,
it.
Well, no, I mean, like, but it, there's no, like, I didn't know what was happening, right? I didn't, and it did, you know, I got to be honest with you, man. I felt like, oh, you know, maybe this is internal bleeding. Maybe this is it. Like, I was really, I was scared, but I tried not to show that to my son. And I said that when we got to this particular, the next location after that 7-hour ride, and I crawled into this tent. I mean, they took me off this horse, which, by the way, I had the only horse in Mongolia with Alzheimer's, man. Like she had no idea who I was. It's like, man, I've been riding you for 8 hours a day, man. I've even stopped for lunch. I've only been gone for 20 minutes, man.
Yeah,
like, I'm
right.
here. Like,
right.
there's not a, I don't have a scent. I mean, really?
Right,
but
right.
No, I crawled into this tent and I looked at my son and I said, listen, man, I'm going to take this Advil and we're going to see if I wake up with any relief. Mm-hmm. And if it is, then I think, you know, we're going to be okay. Everything's fine. And I did, I fell asleep. I don't even remember falling asleep. I woke up, I don't know, 3 hours later or something like that. And I felt marginally better, right? Because I'd found a place that wasn't so painful, Sean.
Right, right.
And then I was able to make it out of the tent. I walked in. I mean, I'm in Mongolia. It's the best horse people in the world.
Yeah,
you know, they had an idea of kind of what it was. And then while I was sleeping, they fermented a bunch of yak vodka.
Sure.
You know, helps. Like
Why?
Yak milk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I drank, we killed a goat that day.
Jesus Christ.
And I drank this yak vodka.
Oh,
they just,
fuck
when
God.
We left there for the next thing, they
ah,
we
Jesus.
Had these like 2 gallons of yak Jesus. Vodka. So I would just like in the morning, you know, like with coffee and follow it with a shot of yak vodka. And a little bit of Advil.
You can't get that at the Marriott now.
Just a mouthful of goat.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it was, and we had no refrigeration for that goat, but we ate that goat every way one can eat a goat.
Oh, sure. Lord.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything I'd rather not do.
Just watching Jason's face.
Well, really? Because I'm going to invite all of you on the next trip.
I mean, I would have an uncomfortable time just researching that trip. Online.
You know what? Well, okay, here's, okay, this is
and reading
this is
how, about it.
The websites I'd have to go to research right. this would have a font and a sort of a user interface that would be aesthetically unappealing to me. And I let alone go to the country.
Yeah,
what's
yeah,
wrong
yeah.
with
well,
me?
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
I because my son was, you know, at this age, I said, and he's obsessed. I got a smart kid, y'all. Like he's a very, very very bright, very curious man. I can't even say young man, because if you sit with him, you feel like you're talking to somebody who's been
around. How old
long.
Is he now, Walton?
Well, he's still 14, man. Like he's a New Year's Day baby.
So this was a recent trip.
Oh, man, I just got back like
Come
2
on.
Months ago, man.
Well, wow. How's your rib now?
You know, better. I mean, I got. I mean, it's such a long story, but kind of made it like kept going. And that day three, it took me. That's when it like got really bad, and it took me like an hour and a half just to get out of the tent. Yeah. I'd wake up before my kid did, just so that he didn't see me that way.
Right. So you'd go do this trip again?
Oh yeah. With you guys. The four of us.
You won't find me.
I'll drive you to the airport. That's it.
What about a safari in Africa?
What's the most adventurous experience that you've ever given yourself? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sean.
Well, during COVID, like right before COVID hit, I booked a Scotty thing where we were going to go on the Orient Express. It's like his dream to go on that train across Europe. So that's like the most extravagant thing I would have ever done. But that's on a fancy train.
Oh, you
train.
Didn't wind up, you didn't? You,
no, because COVID
happened. Have you ever done anything
with
out in nature, though, either of you guys?
Well, I did a day's worth of work, Schedule F, on a Knight Rider episode once. They had me in a honey wagon. And honey wagons, let me tell you something. If you're looking to stretch out and catch a nap at lunch, you're fucked.
Schedule
F.
Yeah, you
are. In the forest. In the forest.
Schedule
Yeah, that's hard. Yeah, your legs are straight up and they're flat. Your feet are flat against the wall.
You can't do it. You got the xylophone wall that is just hearing everybody's business next door. I don't recommend it.
You remember your roommate? You remember who it was?
Old-timer. Yeah. Bless his heart.
Not Ernest Borgnine.
Jack Elam. Maybe it might have been Jack Elam.
I would go if it was like, you know, the kids say glamping. Like if it was, because
well,
I love.
Do I've done, I did when I was your son's age, well, I was 15, I did a 3.5 week canoe trip up in Northern Ontario. And
that was 1985.
We got dropped off on the side of a road and it was, 3.5 weeks of canoeing and it was, ended up being a whole thing and got way behind because the maps were so old. So we had to portage every day for the last 8 days.
Portage. Wow.
And we had to get rescued by, we paddled into this bay and we knew we were way behind and we had to meet a bus at a highway and we knew we were hundreds of kilometer or miles or whatever behind, and we paddled into a bay that you didn't see anybody, and there were no roads up there. There's nothing. It was way up Northern Ontario, and we paddled around this corner. There was a cabin there. We saw some people there, and they drop people, a lot of Americans, off for fishing for a week in the, on a seaplane, and there's a couple there, and we paddled up to their dock. And they're like, are you boys okay? By the way, I'd never let Mike. We were all 15, and then the two guides were 18, right? Wow. So the five of us and then two guides. And we're like, we're kind of in trouble. And at which point, the plane that worked for that company drove by and saw our canoes and came and he landed. And he said, and asked us what the situation. He said, okay, well, we'll get in touch with somebody. You know, this is way before cell phones and all that shit. And we were like, what's going to happen? And then like, 2 hours later, we see a twin otter come and land, and it's the Ministry of Natural Resources. And they picked us up, and we strapped a couple of our canoes to the pontoons, and we took off, and we got out of there. The craziest thing was, at the end of this bay, there were these two small islands really close together, and on each island was a wing. And we're like, what's that? And they're like, back in the 50s, a plane tried to take off, but it was too heavy, and it didn't make it. They sheared off both wings.
Oh, my God.
And we're like, are we okay? And then the guy's like, you know, bush pilot. He's like, oh, yeah, we'll be fine. Hey, no worries.
Wow. Were you scared? Do you remember
yeah,
that feeling
of being? About day four of us being way behind, we started to get a little bit scared. It was really, we were out there, and we were like, nobody knew where we were. And
So anyway, you know, I couldn't eat when they broke for first team. I had to wait till background. I had to eat when background ate. And I'm like, guys, I've got line. I'm saying a couple of lines today. And they're like, no, we're going to want you to stay in holding. And then we'll let you know. We got to get first team through first. And then,
I had to eat when background ate.
But I made it. I made it.
You made it.
Oh, you look great, Jay.
Walton, you grew up in Georgia. Can you say?
God, it's hot there.
Anything specifically from that area that has shaped you into the kind of actor you are today. I mean, I guess you're sort of, you basically it seasoned you a bit, right?
I was going to say this. I don't know if it's Georgia, but also the way that you live your life and you're talking about the stuff you do, you have such an unbelievably freewheeling style. And I mean that as the greatest, as such a compliment. You bring something to every sort of role that you do.
It's no BS.
This kind of, this life, like this kind of freewheeling thing that is so fucking alive and fantastic. Every time you light it up, man. Yeah. And I wonder if that is because of your background, dude.
I've been exposed to stuff. You know, he's got things to draw on.
Look, that's a lot coming from this group of men, because I am such big fans of all of you. As you know, I mean, Sean, you don't, but I am.
Well, that's very sweet. Likewise.
I genuinely live every day like it's my last day. And what I mean by that is, I know what it's like to be hungry. I know what it's like to be cold. I know what it's like to be uncomfortable.
I know now
what it's like to wear really nice clothes. And people say, well, like, because I've had this beautiful
run
Well, that's very kind of you to say. But I, you know, it's like, well, why do you think these people are letting you wear these clothes? I said, because I'm wearing them like I'll never get to wear them again. And that's the truth.
We have a friend,
and I mean that, and that's okay too.
You do have an allergy to buttons, though, and just like Justin Trudeau's got an allergy to sleeves. And what is it with you two? You're in a fight with the clothes.
I'm taking my cues off Richard Gere. I did. You know what? I did a movie with Richard, man. This is more a few years ago, and it was with Dinklage and Bradley and we were sitting there, and it was really, really tired. It's a long, long day, and I looked at him and I said, "Man, I'm so tired. I'm really tired. You must be tired, Richard." And he said, "You know what? You're right. I am. I'm very tired." He said, "But you know the difference between you and me?" I said, "No, man. What's the difference?" He said, "Tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'll still be Richard Gere."
Motherfucker.
And you won't. You motherfucker, man. You're exactly right. You will be. So it's okay. You're okay.
That's really funny.
Now, all right. So you pack up
from Georgia.
You go to Georgia Southern University. I think I got that right. And you do a year there and you say, you know, you want to know what? I think I know what I want to do. So you jump. Did you ride horseback from Georgia out to Los Angeles?
Yeah, I did. I rode a horse.
Yeah. So I've seen
this entire nation. Yeah, I took
you
a long
tie
way
that
around.
Horse
so
up.
I went the northern route, then came back and then took the southern route just to get to L.A.
So you pull into to Los Angeles there at 19. Yeah. And
wow, 19 years old.
What you start the process of chasing the dream. And was it a difficult thing to get an agent and get auditions right away? What did you have a colorful first job to sort of pay the bills during this process? What was it? What was that first year?
Well,
like?
We all have our stories, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was no way I was ever going to go to New York. A vertically integrated city was way above my pay grade. I couldn't handle that living.
Sorry, because you thought New York would be too expensive to live in?
Well, too expensive, but so radically different.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the
urban life
sprawl.
That I kind of grew up. Well, not sprawl. No, I grew up kind of like, you know, in the country with space, a little bit of space.
And a big family, a little family.
No, well, I mean, I have a half brother now, but at the time, I mean, I was really kind of raised an only child, and it was my mom and her three sisters, my grandmother and my cousin, who's like, you know, she's like my aunt's daughter, like my sister, and then all of these crazy Southern hippies, you know, all of these guys. I had just a lot of people that kind of came through my life.
Right. So New York was too much of a cultural shock potentially. So,
maybe on some level, absolutely. But I also think that I was just really attracted to the West, you know, and the idea. I'm growing up in a place where the biggest view that you have is a football field, right? Because of all the pines and all the rest of it. I just love the idea of seeing for miles in any direction. And so I left, you know, at 19,
you know, drove across country and with my dad, believe it or not. And,
oh, right.
You know, and I had, you know, a number. But I watched, I mean, I'm not without people in my life that were in this business, in the sense that my aunt was an actress in the theater and her husband, my uncle. So I grew up kind of watching them on stage.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, I really didn't. I mean, I like doing this, you know. I mean, I did like doing. I didn't know this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. I just really wanted to see the world.
But when you landed day one, what do you do? Like, how do you? What was your plan?
Well, I started working right in Atlanta. Wow. I mean, I started working like there was like Kyle Chandler was this, you know, in this sure. group, and my buddy Ray McKinnon, and just there was a lot kind of going on in Atlanta at that time, and I got a few gigs there, and one was a pretty big one, you know, called Murder in Mississippi, and it was nominated for like 8 Golden Globes with a bunch of really great actors in it. And so I got an agent pretty quick, you okay. know, because yeah. I'd come Good. Out
And they
before.
Said, come on out.
Well, kind of that. I mean, I don't know. They were kind of reluctant. I mean, I don't know why they took me, to be quite honest with you. But I didn't know. I mean, I had a guy's phone number, and I when I first got dropped off.
At the Oakwoods.
No, I got dropped off at this woman. I worked with her husband, and she was like a manager. And I actually put this like on my Insta version of it on my Instagram. But I got dropped off at this apartment. Woman, her husband picked me up, and I got back to her apartment like right off like Sierra Bonita and Hollywood Boulevard. And you know, and she asked me to sign this paper, and I said, I don't really know. I don't think I should do that. I don't even know what I am. And she said, well, you know, if you don't sign it, then you have to leave.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, I don't have anywhere to go. Like, and she said, well, you got to figure that out. I said, well, can I just spend the night? I'll be out of here first thing in the morning. She said, yeah. And I left, you know, first thing the next morning. And I had an audition, actually, with a cast director by the name of Pam Dixon. And I was there, you know, 4.5 hours early and with my luggage. Uh-huh. And she said, what, you've been out here the whole time? I said, yeah, you know. She said, well, just bring your stuff inside. Just hang out. Mm-hmm. And I did, and didn't get the job. But afterwards, I had a phone number from a guy that I'd worked with, and I ran into it at a Rio Bravo in Atlanta. And I called it, and he answered the phone, a pay phone, right? And he said, yeah, man, I'll come pick you up. You can stay with us. And that was kind of it. That was the beginning. Yeah. And I mean, I had $300, you know, in my pocket.
Yeah.
And then got a job like everybody else, you know.
What job? What were you doing?
LA Fitness.
Sure.
You know, 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. shift, making $4
an hour. Were you checking folks in, or were you a personal
checking
trainer?
Checking them in, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the shittiest
them locker,
shift.
Locker keys.
Yeah. Like there was nobody
Shower
there.
Slippers.
Just me. Yeah. And
do you remember where that was? Which LA Fitness that was?
Yeah, Oxnard and Coldwater.
Oh, in the Valley.
Yeah.
Oh, with the racquetball courts. I used to play racquetball in there.
Oh,
as
did
a
you?
Matter of fact, they did. Yeah, did they have that? Yeah,
sure.
They must have
right there on the LA
right
River. Right
on
there.
The LA River.
Would you play
exactly
there with
right.
With Schwartz?
Yeah,
Johnny Schwartz.
Sure. Johnny Schwartz. Would you
Johnny
guys play
Schwartz.
There?
He'd kick my ass every day.
But where? And where were you living at that point? I mean, were you living?
Where was
at,
I
was living at the top of the Sunset Tower. That's where he kept his Porsche.
That's where you started your journey in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Listen, I will say, Walton, it's not surprising. Again, I'm going to get down to just what I know from you over the years, and that this stuff opened up because you come at life with such a great positive attitude, and it is a really great, not to get too weird, but it is a great example of you come out, you make a call, you're open, you're very positive, and you kind of get in life what you put into it. And it's almost like I think that lesson again that you gave your son, I mean, this is all part of a bigger, if you kind of take a broader view, that you've just got this great vibe. And again, it's no surprise to me, man.
Yeah. People really want to hang out with you.
Say. Well, I mean, look, we all have our path, right? And what, you know, how did we get that first job? How did we get a second job? How did we get a third? How did a decade later, 20 years later? I mean, hell, I've been at this 35 years.
Yeah, right.
And I just don't compare myself to anybody else, really.
That's so crucial, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I've got, like, we have a lot of friends in common. I've got a lot of friends who are a lot more successful than I am, and a lot that aren't. But it's the same, right?
We're all the same. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we really are. It is.
Sean was saying something interesting because we were talking about this thing I went to the other night, and Sean said, "Isn't it funny? that no matter what, we, at a, on a certain level, nobody thinks that they've made it. I don't care who you are, because you're always trying to, right?
Right.
You're always, there's no, like, people like, oh, you made it. Like, I haven't made it. I'm, like, thinking about, you know, how do I, right?
And everybody else like, thinks,
they say in, there's this great line, I just saw the movie J. Kelly, which is pretty good. George Clooney says, you know, that he spent his whole life trying to get something that he thought he really wanted, and then he got it, and then he realized, oh, wait, I'm it's not over. I gotta keep it. You know, it's like, so no matter where you are, even if you think you're there, you still got to work on trying to keep it if you care to. You know,
do you think they'll put your quote? Do you think they'll put your quote on the poster, JB? J. Kelly, pretty good.
Pretty good.
Why not? On the back. Yeah, on Sunset Boulevard.
You know?
There it is.
It's pretty good. This guy, I highly recommend.
Can I ask you gentlemen something?
Capricorn.
Do you get insecure?
All
walking
the time.
Into a room. I mean, yes, in general, right?
Every
I live
day,
my life insecure.
Every moment.
But like, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Walking into a room?
Yeah. Walking into a room with, you know, like an event or like a bunch of actors or writers or directors or, you know, like something affiliated with this business.
Yeah, of the time.
I don't get insecure about status because I don't care about it. I get insecure about carrying a conversation.
Carrying a conversation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
You're an incredible conversationalist.
No. But the work that it takes for me to get up to being a good conversationalist is exhausting.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. It's exhausting being interested in somebody you're sitting next to at a table with placards with your name on it next to somebody you don't know, and you have to like
start from scratch.
Hey, what's going on? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I get anxiety about that, but not so much about like status. I don't care about status.
No, not anymore. No.
I think that I'm just naive, and I don't know what it is that I'm blessed with that. It's kind of, you know, that just like, I just don't have any sense. Yeah, I had a really cool, I was doing this interview thing the other day. It's going to come out, but that, and I had the pleasure of sitting next to Benicio Del Toro.
And that's somebody I would like to sit next to.
Yeah, and the woman said, she said, you know, this idea of imposter syndrome. She said, do you guys ever suffer from imposter syndrome? And she said, Benicio. And he goes, what is that? And I was like, oh, man.
That's wild. That was so dope. Cool.
And she goes, no, you know that thing? And he goes, I don't know what that is. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
That would make me feel even more of an imposter. You said that.
But it was so dope.
It would send me over the edge.
But at the same time, it was so cool because it was such a great sort of lesson of like, you don't have to, right? Like you can kind of let that go. And he has it naturally in the most beautiful way. But like, you don't have to have it, you know?
No, that's right. Yeah. I've gotten to where, like, you know, I've just gotten, it scares me a little bit, you know, but I've gotten really comfortable at work.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, you know what I mean? And that's not a feeling that I'm comfortable with. I like to be, when I'm working, I'm not very social. I'm alone. I'm just off doing my thing.
Yeah, I like that.
And then you kind of come in. I don't hang out and just small talk. I don't have the energy. I'm like you, Sean. I get exhausted.
Yeah me too. Yeah. I'm an introvert for sure.
Yeah. But you know David, you know that famous David, I just looked it up, the David Bowie quote. I love this. You probably know it. Aging is an extraordinary process whereby you become the person you always should have been.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff that we're talking about, I think the older you get, the more you like, I can walk into a room because who gives a shit?
I just had an extraordinary experience, and who knows if it'll translate. But I am up here doing this thing. I'm in Montana, and outside of Bozeman, Montana.
He's in the back of an In-N-Out.
I'm doing this. I have the pleasure of doing these scenes with the great Michelle Pfeiffer. Jay, what do you call her? M5?
Michi Fife.
And she's so brilliant. And I just had this moment, and I think it's age. I don't know if it's age or what it is. And I could just say it honestly, that I was just there doing this thing, and we're literally shooting on the edge of this river that's out there that's beautiful. It's just, what I'm looking at is insanely beautiful. And then snow-capped mountains in the distance and the thing. Yeah. And we're about to go, and I'm like, what am I doing in this scene? And what am I doing? And I just went like, oh man, I literally was like, anything can happen. Just enjoy it. Just be right here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then it was just like unreal.
Like, incredible.
Was, yeah. I'm just like letting go. And I don't think I could have done it as a younger man. And I think that as I'm getting older, I've just let go of so many hang-ups.
Yeah. Because, well, because you asked that, do you have that? Because you asked us that, do you have, are you still?
Well, I guess my, what I was kind of getting at, just to hear your experiences. Yeah, I think that I just carried so much of the people that I've gotten to play, you know, it's they're pretty lonely, you know, they're you know, nefarious, and they got a lot going on, and they're under a lot of pressure mentally and emotionally for the most part, mm-hmm. and so I quite enjoy kind of being in that state, in that place, especially, you know, at work, but you know, something, you know, happened recently where it's just similar, but I just showed up like, yeah, hi, how are you? And I was just
right.
not, and I was there. I'd read the script 250 times. I know what's happening, but I all of a sudden I didn't need that anymore. I mean, it's like the difference between, you know, your 20s and your 30s, and then for me becoming a father at 39, so let's call it 40s, and then learning how to be a parent. Oh God, now I'm a parent. I'm in my 50s, and it's okay. I know how to be a parent. Yeah. I feel like I know how to tell stories, and I enjoy it more than I've ever enjoyed it. So it's just a new experience for me.
Right.
Like I don't have
but
that.
But it's freeing though, right?
It is so free, man.
Yeah, I love
it. It is. It's so free. I love it.
We'll be right back. And now back to the show.
Well, do you feel that, because, you know, we do this thing where we're playing people, and I think all four of us are interested in playing people that don't have it all together, people that are somewhat broken in an interesting way, and vulnerable and human and have flaws and all that stuff. And have you felt like you've, you know, we're talking about as we get older, we get better, right? Just as people. Yeah. So do you think that that's at odds with playing characters that don't have it all together? Like, as we're starting to get our shit together as we get older, it's sort of at odds with playing characters that are a little bit broken. And then, in fact, as you get more and more successful, maybe, you know, as we were joking about earlier, you kind of get a little bit soft because things are sort of privileged around you and luxurious and stuff. Is it? Do you fight that sort of embrace of success? Does it go against what you like to live in?
You know what? That's a great question, and I would ask you all to answer that question too. But because I think we're told a lie, you know, early on, that, you know, you gotta struggle, you gotta live in it, you have to be fucked up,
right?
To play fucked up people,
right? Right.
Yeah. The truth is, no, man, you don't. You can just be really evolved and not create distance between yourself and that experience. Actually, really empathize with these people, and I think that's where I've gotten to in my life. And I generally empathize with human beings. I believe that all of our paths are by nature narcissistic. We cast ourselves as the antagonist and the protagonist in our own story, and we just watch how we interface with the fucking world.
For sure.
When you step outside of that, when you really step outside of that narcissistic DNA quality of survival, all of a sudden the world just becomes, it's just easier.
Mm-hmm.
Life is easier. It's just calmer, and I'm calmer. And I feel that happening kind of in my professional life. It's happened. God, I had such a hard time. I watched you guys on Kimmel, you know, the three of you on Kimmel. And I listened, I heard, saw you, Sean, and I saw like how far, you know, you sat and kind of speaking about your anxiety. And I still have it on, you know, some level, but I had it. Mm-hmm. I really had it.
And it's also a little bit of a superpower, but yeah.
It is a superpower. And getting ready to walk into a room for people that experience that, and it's like, I'm gonna show, because I show up for shit. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I show up for a conversation, and nothing is half-assed.
That's right.
I show up for everything. Yep. And if you put that much into it, if you care that much about it, Well, then, and it's not performative. It's not a performance.
Right.
But it takes a lot from you. And on the other side of that, you know, you've got to just be alone and quiet and kind of do all of that. And I envy people that can just fucking move through it, man.
Without
expending like a ton of energy and still be just as charming and all the rest of it.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Yeah,
me
but
too.
I wonder if that, because there have been times when I have been less insecure and really kind of just cruise through it and not. And I just don't feel like, while I might have a lesser level of anxiety, I just don't feel like I'm participating as much. Like, I don't feel like I'm feeling the day as much. I like being insecure in as many things and situations as I can. I just feel like I'm a little bit more eyes open,
alive,
ears open, heart open. If I am, like, I worry when I get too comfortable. Anyway, all right. Yeah. So you come out to LA. You start working. Do you remember what that job was that gave you a little bit of like a, oh wow, I think I might be able to make a living at this. Some people have raised some eyebrows. I'm getting some calls. Was there one that kind of initiated the momentum that you've kept going since then?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, very specific, right?
Yeah.
We've all had many before this happened and after this happened events in our life, and I valley parked, I sold cowboy boots, then I became a personal trainer at the same gym that I started this thing. I did all of that, and then I got this movie called The Apostle with Robert Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
oh my God, you know, he had so wrote, good. You're so good, and I love that movie. You're great.
Kind of, but I was 24 years old, mm-hmm. and it was through the process of kind of telling that story, and the relationship that I had with Bobby on the other side of that I felt like, okay, I can, you know what, man, because I always were, and I worked as soon as I got here. I was very very fortunate.
Yeah.
And I you know, poor kid, Georgia. I just squirreled it away. Always, and just lived off whatever I made doing whatever job that I was doing. But at that point, I thought, well, you know what? I'm not gonna do that anymore, and I'm just gonna, you know, focus kind of on this. And then, you know, I don't think people really knew what to do with me, because on the other side of that, thinking my manager, who was actually sitting here, was my manager then.
Nice.
And she, you know, leaned in my ear, or somebody that she was with leaned in my ear and said, "Hey, man, your life's about to change." And that's good, because it was a Toronto Film Festival or whatever. And then on the other side of it, people just thought, well, this guy's just fucking from there. They just got, he's just a local hire. You know?
Oh, they thought you weren't even like an actor. You were a real.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow. It's like, oh, okay.
What a compliment. Just,
well, I guess, you know, it is to Bobby Duvall. You know, that's what he says. But and then I just kept cruising. You know, I just said yes in life more than I said no. And I, you know, my 20s weren't under a microscope. I just got to do my thing.
Yeah.
But now, when you walk down the street, you're getting stopped.
Yeah.
And you have been for years. But what's your relationship with that? Do you feel like those are two separate people? The person that the public recognizes, wants to talk to, or have you been able to incorporate that into what seems to be an incredibly authentic person? From the very beginning, you've been very tapped into keeping it real, not being full of shit, no artifice. No veneer, yet the public basically has a say on who they think you are as well. And sometimes fame, there's a discomfort with merging those two things. Have you made a fan of that, or a friend of that?
Oh, you know what? I honestly, and I, whether you like it or whether you don't, whether you like me or you don't like me, I am me.
Yeah, yeah.
I am me privately. I am me publicly. Mm-hmm. Anybody that knows me very, very well, listening to this podcast, would say, yeah, he's the exact same. And when, like, you know, interfacing with people on the street, this is no bullshit. This is
like,
how
because editing yourself everywhere you go is exhausting too. It's like,
because
I be
the person who's not full of shit, who's no BS, would be at a dinner table and enjoying your conversation with your friend, and then a fan would come up and ask for a picture or something. The person who's like truly no bullshit would say, "Hey, man, I'm having dinner. I can't do that right now." But like this is like an example.
Kurt Russell would say that. Kurt Russell did say that. You know what I mean? He called somebody out who said, like, I'm a pilot. And he's like, no, you're fucking not. You're not a pilot. Tell me about this thing. But I'm that's not my that's not my personality. Like, that's not where I come from. That's not how I was raised. And for me, and I really mean this, man. When I'm stopped on the street, I mean, like it has been a lot, and it has been a lot over the last 2 or 3 years. Yeah. But honestly, man, I feel like I can provide for my family. It just means that somebody else is going to hire me. Yeah. And,
and we have a public job. That's part of the job.
It is part of the job. And I genuinely love meeting people. I live my life differently in that way. I never meet a stranger. Yeah. I like, you know, even where we live now, which is radically different than where we've lived our entire life. You know, my friends are the painter and the plumber and the artist and all the rest of it. But I was raised in a household with crazy fucking Southern hippies. like insane. Uh-huh. And
with love.
With love, absolutely, but certifiably insane in the best way.
And well, we all are.
Like a Christmas at our house, like with one little heater or whatever. More often than not, somebody would go to the store, and then whoever went to the store would come back with three or four people, and that would happen to a couple of people who would come back. So then all of a sudden, like in a family of whatever, there would be like 25 people sitting in around our Christmas tree that were, you know, when we had food, and then we would go, because we didn't have gifts for them, we would just go pick out, you know, I remember giving my Atari like Pitfall game to somebody, just like my mom said, just go in there and pick out something you can give away.
Whoa.
And and I went in and wrapped it up in a Christmas present. I'd just been playing it all morning, and you know, and gave it out. Like that's kind of what we did, and that's, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of how I live my life.
I love that. Wait, I just wanted to ask. Well, like, you know, we could go through tons of your stuff: Hateful Eight, Django, Cowboys and Aliens, The Unicorn. Like all those great things that you've done.
Shield and
but only because it's the big recent massive thing is White Lotus, right?
Yeah.
Is like you were so fucking great in that, and it was such a great season, and the world watches that show.
Yeah.
It's so massive.
That must have felt different.
And you got to work with your buddy Sam Rockwell, our pal Sammy Rock.
Yeah, I love Sam.
That must have been fun. But shooting in Thailand must have been, well, maybe not for you. You probably loved all the fucking hot, sweaty conditions, right? Lots of open-toed shoes.
Yeah,
In the
travel. Provided your own wardrobe.
I went to that part of the world 18 years ago. And it's a long story. I've said it, so I won't repeat it here. But I went all over Southeast Asia. Once I got to a certain point in my life, after studying, like I didn't party really in my 20s. You know, I was hyper focused on what it was I was asking myself to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to. I mean, I went to
Roxbury.
Well, the Brown Derby, right? Or the Brown, you know, all the places over in Los Feliz with Elaine and what's the name of the place? Yeah.
Anyway,
I did all of that, and but barely. And so then when I turned 30 years old, and you know, we were on the second year of the Shield or after the first year of the Shield, I just said, you know what, this is my time. Now I'm just going to finish a job, and I'm going to take off and go somewhere in the world. And just hang out and get to know that place. And I've done that now, you know, sans family and with family for I'm 54 years old. So I've been doing that for 24 years.
Your passport it gives you such a
richness of life that's not just about the doing this stuff.
Yeah.
It gives you real world experience. Sean and I talk about this all the time.
Yeah,
like having that kind of real world experience and getting out in the world is important, man.
I know.
How do you do that? How do you find something new to bring back to the table?
I try to do that too.
I think it's what Will just said. I have to force myself to get out of the house. So I have.
I'll put on CNN International, you know, and I'll just I'll see how it's all going.
Yeah. I like to go places, man. Yeah,
the dumbest things.
I need to do
when
that.
Jason asked me to go to the Dodgers game, I was like, yeah. And by the way, never been like to a Dodgers game and like this those seats, but just as far as an experience goes, it's like, wow, I have that in my brain now.
Yeah, and you didn't take the 101. You took Sunset. Oh, right. That was new for you too.
Back roads.
Hey, that's an adventure,
and
man.
It was an 18-inning game.
Oh my God.
Take the five, man.
It was great though.
Now, what about to talk before we let you go? Tell us about Fallout. Tell us about so you've made a friend of the 3-hour makeup session. It's certainly worth it. My God, what an incredible job they do with you.
Thanks, man. We got to do this. You get a call from Jonathan Nolan. You know, the first word out of your mouth is yes. You know,
right.
Yeah, read the scripts afterwards, and. One of the writers was she wrote Tomb Raider, and she was a friend of mine, Geneva Dorr Robertson, and Graham Wagner. I knew through some friends. I was just a fan of his, really. But it started. It was all on the page. I didn't know like how they would tell this story.
Yeah.
And it was a lot. Like day one was really intense. Thinking like, man, I'm too old for this shit. Like I don't know how I can pull this off. It was in New York and. It was like 99 degrees with a heat index of like 106. And
good God.
And then we and just kept... Way, go ahead.
No, just to say, your makeup, like it's like you don't have a nose.
No.
So how do
but
they
do... But I
do
have a nose.
I know, but how do they get rid of your nose?
You know, it's called CGI.
Oh, okay.
Digital.
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah. I thought it was okay.
Still there. Yeah, they do that like in the post. So people see me when I do my nose. Actually, I just saw these screeners that they send out to everybody. And one scene they didn't do the effects on yet for the critics. And it's like, oh fuck, that's my nose.
Now do you have to act with like a tracking mark on the tip of your nose?
Yeah, it doesn't affect me because I can't see it. But yeah,
is it like a little X or a dot or a green?
It is five dots or four. One, two, three. Four dots. I'll send you a photo.
Oh my
God. Yeah.
So we did it, man, and it came out and it was really well received and it became, you know, one of the biggest shows in the world. I mean, it truly is a global experience. I mean, this game resonates so deeply with so many people all over the world, and we got an opportunity to do it again. And jump right back in there. I've been on a long run.
One of the best pilots I've ever seen. Like the first episode I've seen. It's amazing.
Thanks, man.
Did you shoot the second season back in New York too?
No. We're in LA now, man. We're here. Yeah, and it feels good to be back here and to work with an LA crew. You know, to see all of
so
these.
So rare to work here.
You know,
yeah,
it's so tough here in this town right now. But it feels great to look out and go, yeah, we're back home. And so we did it. We did season two. And look, we've all been down these roads a number of times. And you know that if you get this first season, if you can get a critical mass to like it, and I knew it with The Shield and with Justified and with like The Righteous Gemstones or any of these things, that you have an opportunity to do something transcendent, really.
Right,
I mean, if you can play it safe, or you can go for it, and that's what you know everybody did, and we're you know it's coming out on December 17th, and
that's right, on Amazon.
Yeah, man, and we're really, really, really excited about it.
Well, you always go for it. You always go for it. And as I said at the top, you never drop us. You take us with you. Yeah. You carry us safely on these great creative journeys that you take us on.
Oh, dude, so, what was the show that you and Danny did that killed me that was the other one before?
Vice Principals?
Vice Principals.
Vice Principals. Dude.
So good.
Well,
anything you guys do.
You killed me in that, dude.
Thanks, brother. Yeah.
I'd give a limb to work with you one day, buddy. So my fingers are crossed for
likewise.
That.
Same.
This will have to do you. Until then. Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us.
Walton, you're just a legend, dude.
Fellas.
You are, right, buddy.
I'll buy you a glass of whatever you want whenever I see you next. And I look forward to continuing.
Just take me on a horseback ride. You know, I got to get cultured.
Anything.
What if you woke up with me in Mongolia?
In a tent in Mongolia, I would need a few batteries. It'd have to be a lot of batteries in there.
Okay, man. All right, y'all. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you all.
So nice to see you.
Great to see you, dude.
All right, I'll see you soon.
Bye, bud.
Okay.
Yeah, the slam.
He slammed it.
He did it.
Love him.
Yeah.
I know.
I feel a little seasoned just even talking to him. I don't need to go to Mongolia just yet.
I know. You know. By the way, those are the kind of guys, like, obviously we have tons and tons of favorite episodes. This is one of my favorite ones. Like, that guy I could talk to forever. How great is his vibe?
That's a good dude.
His lust for life is just incredible and infectious.
Wouldn't you want to invite him over?
It's funny when he talks about walking into a room. Every time he walks in a room, he lights it up, and it's genuine. It's not put on. That's so funny to hear him say that. As I said, I saw him the other night. He just comes in, and he just has this, like, joie de vivre, as
we
say.
He's got sparkle. Oh, a little fairy dust.
He does have sparkle.
Yeah.
When you were talking about your experience, the outdoor thing, I wanted to tell my story about my camp when I went to camp.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's hear it. Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I went to music camp at Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp in Michigan, and it was in the middle of the woods, and that's my only kind of outdoor long-term woodsy kind of thing.
Sure.
Okay. Anyway, who cares? But after 2 weeks of being in a camp in the middle of the woods, I was ready to say, bye!
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarv, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smart. Less.